出て。Death Random。With your host, GMD.
Yes, hello, good evening on this beautiful Indian summer night. And with me tonight are actually two co-hosts, sidekicks, whatever you want to call it. First of all, we have retired nerd Oxor. Hiya.
Oi.
Hey, so you're retired. You got a new posse now, right, in Amsterdam. You bought a moped and...
Oh, you mean that I'm recycling around with the local...Moped Farage?
Yes. And also with us is sharpshooter Walter. Welcome. Good evening.
I'm not a sharpshooter. Where's my Nerf gun, by the way?
Yeah, I think someone hit it.
Hang on. I'll fetch it.
Oh, dear. He's going to. At first, you're fetching beer. Now you're fetching the Nerf gun. What's the difference anyway?
It's lying somewhere in the...
Next to the unfinished 3D printer, I think. Yeah, so...
It prints 3D.
You've got a nice mood light in here. We've got a nice show, I think, again, I hope. Well,
I have a lot of papers in front of me about all those things that we're going to do and we're going to say. So
very organized
again.
Let's on
with this stuff.
What? No, I just want to say I've got some nice music lined up from Leinenspel. He played this music at the opening of Freck. It's all CC and it's like down-tempo chill. And I think that goes nicely with the relaxed way the government in the Netherlands are dealing with IT problems.
So, do we have to say anything about Freck?
Freck, yeah. It was, I enjoyed it. I mean, the mate was a bit expensive, but it's the...
€2 for a bottle of cola.
Yeah, a bottle of cola. Oh, okay. Then again, the soda and all was for free, so, and if lots of food, and oh shit, there's the Nerf gun. But it's the latest space in the Netherlands. It's in Leeuwarden, which is Friesland, which is in the north. I don't know why do you have the Nerf gun anyway. I mean, we can't shoot our remote guests. So, you have stickers.
I have stickers. No, if somebody wants a sticker of Freck, you send an email to Signal and you get a sticker.
Ooh. Or you tweet. With the hashtag Signal, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm not following the hashtag Signal.
Not?
No, I'm not.
Identica? Not sorry? Identica. That's
Identica.
The...
Well, you're in charge of the... We've got a projector here to increase the interactivity of our show. But, Freck was nice. I liked it. And nice music that I... I got virtually shot by a Nerf gun on IRC. There's been a lot of fuss about the government and ICT over the past weeks in the Netherlands, and it sort of is the theme of the show. But there are government agencies who did get it right. For example, there is the Dutch Forensics Institute, and we recently went there with some hackerspace people, and it was really a cool hackerspace, actually. First thing we saw was a guy with a hip shirt, you know, the event way back.
A white one.
I'm colorblind, I don't know, it was a shirt. And but it was a cool place, and I spoke to one of their hackers. That was on, well, that was yesterday, actually. And let's just listen to that.
Hi, you're in Singapore, I understand.
I'm out of the country.
How's the weather over there?
Hot.
Hot. Okay. Well, that's a coincidence. We have a few hot days here as well. So you're missing the last.
That's because I'm not in the country.
Exactly. Hey, but tell me, what's the NFI, the Dutch Forensic Institute?
We are a forensic service provider, as our CEO likes to call it. We do forensic analysis on pieces of evidence. So that's everything from a fingerprint to DNA sample to a smartphone that's been thrown into a lake and later on digged up.
Wow, so this is in criminal investigations, right?
Yeah, most of the time it is. It isn't necessarily so, but in about 99 out of 100 cases it is.
Yeah, so this makes some hackers who sometimes border on the legal a bit nervous sometimes. But I understand you are not the like the police going out to find the suspects. It's more that you get cases and check the statements and check the evidence if everything is consistent, right?
Yeah, we're more concerned like a judge with finding out what happened than actually catching someone. The investigative process the police does is mostly about catching the bad guy. What we do is we evaluate the evidence against the hypothesis laid down by either the district attorney or the prosecution and the defense on the other side. And preferably we get both hypotheses. So the prosecution says we think that system X was hacked by the guy sitting over here in the bench, because that's the suspect. And the defense says, my suspect was nowhere near a computer at that point in time, and he certainly did not hack the equipment we're talking about. And we can evaluate all the evidence against both hypotheses and give a likelihood ratio, given the evidence we have, which hypothesis is more likely.
Okay, so that's sometimes kind of difficult to explain, I guess, because people come to you, well, did he do it or not?
Yeah.
And you have to say, it depends.
We give a likelihood ratio, and it works a bit like if it rains, the floor gets wet, right?
Right.
But if the floor is wet, it might have rained. And if you know the local conditions, then you can say, well, it was very likely that it rained, but you cannot rule out that a neighbor splashed water on it, or a large truck loaded with cans of water fell over and splashed water on the side. I mean, we don't know everything, and we don't pretend we know everything. We can just say, okay, given this evidence, the hypothesis that it has rained is more likely, given the evidence that the street is wet, than that it did not rain.
Got it. So you never say with 100%, well, it has rained. But do you ever get as close as like 99%?
Well, if the street is dry, then we're sure that it did not rain.
yeah, unless someone covered up. Well, I mean, you still have this little percentage, I guess, that someone could have covered up. But
the exclusion in a penal court, if the discussion is about whether it has rained, given that the street is wet, if the street is wet, then the street is not dry. So if you find a dry street, then the hypothesis is not going to be true.
true, yeah. NFI, it's a Dutch Forensics Institute. It's a big institute, and there are several departments there. I mean, if you think forensics, you think about bodies and finding out, you know, well, what you see on TV. But there's a lot of there's ballistics, and you are with the IT department. So I'm curious, what kind of work goes on there?
In the IT department, or the digital technology department, as we call it, we do everything that involves IT and isn't classical, as in we do stuff like get the content from a hard drive, get evidence from a broken phone, get the evidence from a chip that is installed inside an airbag unit to see what the acceleration was of the car at the point in time.
Okay, so it's not just servers and workstations, but it's also the embedded.
Those are in there as well, but we also do the weirder electronics. Sometimes coming down to, here's a bag with wires and schematics, and what does it do? it might be a means of setting off an explosive, but sometimes you get into strange stuff like, could you use this ball of wires and some transistors and some resistors to build something that can set off an explosive?
Oh, that's a really broad question. Is that the weirdest thing you ever got, or is there something stranger?
No, I think I didn't get that question, fortunately. But the weirdest thing I did, it was a question which in first instance sounded like, did anything happen? So that question was rather easy to answer, but obviously you know what the question behind the question was. There was a break-in or something happened at a certain point in time. And did something relevant to the crime happen at that point in time was, of course, the right question. But the first question on paper said, did anything happen? And I looked at this paper and said, yes. Say something happened.
You never know what kind of equipment you get, I guess. How do you prepare for that?
We try to have stuff. As in, we build collections of telephones, we build collections of tape drives, we build collections of old hardware that's going to be thrown away. We have a very nice museum, for instance. I mean, we got working Commodore 64s, 128, Amigas, some MSXs somewhere. I mean, it's like in my childhood. And we try to get also the newest stuff you can buy on the market. That's one part what we do. The other part is listen and talk and go to meetings and go to conferences to get intellectual challenge and more information about new stuff that's coming around or new ideas that are developed.
Cool, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's just like a hackerspace. You have old hardware, you have new hardware, you go to conferences. I don't see that. Well, the only thing is you've got more money than the hackerspaces have the really cool stuff because you have one device where you even can rewire an entire chip I saw. That was pretty awesome. But there's a whole diverse array of expertise that's in this one department even. That's quite amazing. And it's not just taking apart stuff. You're also trying to put all the data into one system, which means that you sometimes have to re-implement certain drivers it's kind of like the problem the Royal Library has, for example, or any organization that has documents from, say, 10, 20 years ago. Try to find Microsoft Word version 2.something still running. I mean, I think that's a challenge as well for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's why we've developed our own analysis tool. Also, because it makes it more easy for us to automate parts of the analysis. Because if you look at an average case, you find about 1 million files. You're never going to look at those files individually each. I mean, that's no way you're going to do that.
No.
Say if I have an image, a copy of a Linux box, then mounting the file system by hand is going to change the image because X3, for instance, has a log stored on it. If you mount the log, then it's going to replay the log. So that's not fun.
No, because at that point you change the evidence that you're investigating, right? And that's something you want to avoid.
And also the log itself contains relevant information for the time that you made the image or the time the machine was switched off. So if a hacker, for instance, a black hat one, of course, shut down the machine, then the X3 log file can contain interesting information about the last changes made to the system, for instance. So we want to look at the log itself as well, apart from the files in the file system. So that's why we've implemented large parts of the Linux file system drivers, large parts of the NTFS file system, large parts of the BSD file system. But one benefit we have is we do not have to implement the write operations. Those are always hardest to get right. Once you get to files, you get Word has one version every year, every 2 years. So yeah, there are different versions for Word. There are different versions for WordPerfect if you've got an alt case. There are different versions for Excel. There are different versions for a SQL database. It's horrendous the amount of files you have in a file system.
Wow, yeah, it is. And I guess you're never done with interpreting them all. But it's pretty awesome work, actually. So yeah, these file formats, that's one of the problems you run into. Of course, I can imagine not all the equipment you get is in perfectly working order either.
No, sometimes it's broken. And broken can mean it's been on the bottom of a puddle for a half a year. The corrosion on a circuit board is very great. But then the benefit from the NFI comes in. We're not just the digital department. We also got guys from environmental analysis. They know how to extract, how to clean stuff so they can look at the soil samples themselves. But hey, once they get it clean, we have a clean circuit board as well. So they have excellent equipment for cleaning stuff. We also have to cooperate in those cases with other departments about what sequence are we going to use to look at the data, because there might be soil on it that's relevant for the chemistry department or the biology department maybe. So we have to cooperate a lot because we tend to break stuff if it wasn't broken in the first place. And then we do our stuff and then we try to fix it or get it at least to a state where we can read the data off it.
And that can be quite a challenge, I guess, sometimes.
And that's quite a challenge, yeah.
And apart from that, you know, I guess if you have a certain circuit board, even if you know where it comes from, you have the same problem we have when we want to, at Hackerspace, when we want to do something. How to find the specs, you know?
Yeah.
You can Google around, but some of the chips are so specific to one item. Do you get more cooperation from the industry, from the vendors of these chips, or is it the same for you?
It really depends. Sometimes you get some cooperation, but it sometimes depends on the case. Sometimes it depends on who you talk to. I mean, it's a bit like social engineering sometimes.
Look at that. Wow. I mean, it looks like the perfect workplace for a hacker, someone who's curious, investigative, observant. Just one thing. I mean, you are dealing with evidence in sometimes horrible cases, right? Or yeah. I guess you also deal with cases that involve child porn. Isn't it hard to work with that? I mean, if you have to view video footage of I don't know, burn victims or stuff like that.
I must say, if we can avoid it, we do not look at the evidence, at the pictures themselves. For starters, we don't work for Vice. Therefore, we are not allowed to say whether or not something is an image of child abuse in the first place. We're not allowed to say if it is a child. Once we know we have pictures, then it's done for us. Then we hand the pictures over to the Vice Squad and they then determine whether or not it's child abuse. So most of the time we avoid looking at the pictures. But when you're reconstructing a file format, you cannot always avoid looking at it. And yes, those pictures can be quite unsettling.
Wow, yeah, I can imagine. But it sounds like a really challenging workplace, like all these intellectual puzzles, basically, that you get from
it
all kinds of... I mean, I'd work there in a minute. Are you actually looking for people?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are looking for people. It's very hard to find... it's very hard to find people that know what hex is. If you get a hex string, they can say, oh, this looks like an ASCII string in hex encoding. It sounds funny, but it's very hard to find people that have the actual hacker attitude. And we're white hats. I mean, we work for the law. Therefore, we cannot do stuff that it isn't allowed.
Oh, yeah. Well, if people are interested, I mean, I guess they have to go through all kinds of screenings before they even get accepted. But where can they find information?
Well, they can find information on our website. The shortest one is www.holmes.nl.
Holmes, like the detective Sherlock Holmes, yeah?
The official website, which is www.forensicinstitute.nl. Of forensicinstitute.nl.
Yeah, so that was actually... oh no, I forgot the name. It was Aaron from the Dutch Forensics Institute. And I've seen some real cool stuff going on there. I've got a piece of music here before we go to our next item. And this is, well, as I told you, from the collection of Lane and Spell, who downloaded all this stuff from the internet the night before the opening, but got some quite cool, deep, minimal stuff. This is the MLT mix by Bekti and Taito from the Insectorama Net label. Yeah, I mean, that's quite nice music for a nice evening like today. And meanwhile, the studio is filling up. I mean, there's now four people in front of me. This is unique. I've never had this during any of my shows. Something else I never had is a use for the effects on this mixing desk. But on the phone, I have someone who knows a bit more about the insecurity of ICT at the government and also at companies. And he's known as Insected, and we had to scramble your voice. Why is that?
Hi, good evening. Yeah, it's because I don't like old people calling me this week and complaining about the things I've been discussing, and some things I might say might be very sensitive, so I won't be calling any exact names of any company, so I won't be very specific.
Okay, so you've been you've been hacking into systems basically, and found all sorts of nasty leaks.
Yeah, I've been peeking and poking around in systems, mainly governmental or security based or financial or power plant security and things like that. And I found all sorts of data, like social security numbers, pictures, home addresses, telephone numbers, and everything is freely available on the web. Even at security companies who say they are there to secure you.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, and if you find these things, I mean, social security numbers and all, that's pretty useful stuff. What do you do if you find something like that?
Yeah, no. Normally, I call in directly to the institution where the data is from, and but lately they've been giving me a hard time. So I usually use journalists to help me out, because that's my only way of protecting my identity.
Right, because
being able to speak to them.
Right, because a journalist usually he can claim to protect his sources, so he doesn't have to give people your name if they ask. But what happens if you go to these organizations yourself?
Yeah, I have this experience with a couple of organizations for the government. I have been reporting like 10 leaks at the same time. And one of the ministries, the responsible one, called me, and he was warning me that the other ministry was trying to sue me, so I should step back and keep my mouth shut for a moment so they wouldn't get more pissed off. And that was the warning I get from the one ministry about the other one. And that's not so bad, because the government, they have rules, and they tend to keep to the rules here in the Netherlands. So it's worse when you encounter some private businesses, and mainly when it's about love's money, they call in private investigators, and they do all things that are on the borderline of what's legal and what's not. They do psychological games like the cop bad cop thing, and threatening me that I will be in the court for the rest of my life if I go to the media with the story, and things like that are very common.
Wow, but actually you try to help them, right? I mean, it's not like you're after their data to sell it on the street, or you didn't ask money to reveal it, I guess, or...
No, I never asked anybody. I just make a proposal. I say, you can bring the story to the media yourself, or I'll bring it. And sometimes they really don't like it.
So I mean, if you tell them, if they fix it, they won't have you don't have to go to the media, right?
Yeah, true. But sometimes the problems are so weird that you don't even expect them to be there. Like you can manipulate stock exchanges, you can trade stocks for people who are trading online, and things like that, and then there seems to be no security in place, and no check on the code before it goes online. It just is there, and it's all hell finished.
The page
doesn't even build up right, and they put it online. There's no check on the code. There's nothing there, and when I talk about it like that, they really get scared. And they say, if you go to the media like that, they think we really don't do anything. Yeah, but it is the truth. Should I keep my mouth shut because they don't do anything?
But how is it possible that these systems are so easy to break? I mean, you would say that, for example, a financial company would spend some money on a good secure system, right?
You might think that, but that's not true. If you go and check, you will find them yourselves, and it's all not all loose ends on all the sides of the software. When you browse around and you, especially when you go to the newer pages, you will see it's all half finished and already online. And when it's half finished, you will see the data, but it's no input validation, and it's all that makes holes, so you can access all data. And what I see in practice is that usually they don't have any management on database rights. So you're basically able to update or insert or do anything you like.
Amazing. So it's not even really complicated hacks like exploiting buffer overflows in certain versions of software. It's just the basic stuff like SQL injections and cross-site scripting.
SQL injection is the worst thing, I guess, because it gives you access directly to the data. But there's also cross-site scripting that might not seem so bad. But when people, for example, are posting links online that point to an SQL injected website that is trusted by everybody, they will click the link and then they will not see the content from the website. They will see the injected content. It could be anything, like some login screen to that website. And if people enter their personal details there, their username and passwords, it will not be posted to the website, but it will be posted to some other server, some server set up by the hacker. So that's definitely a way to get the sensitive information.
Wow, so that's silly. I mean, do you think, for example, if we talk about government, local government, national government, are they aware of these, how easy it is to get into most of these systems?
Yeah, some departments are. For example, in like 2005, I've been going to Security Plaza here in Utrecht in Holland, and they've been giving these lectures about SQL injection. It was from the Ministry of Economics, and so they should be aware of it, at least from 2005.
Yeah, and it still is a problem. I mean, there's so much examples that one can find of systems that have been compromised for, well, a year or more and haven't been fixed. It's amazing. What about the future? It's been a risky thing for you. Will you continue to uncover these issues? You fear the consequences. What is driving you to do this?
My major drive is that the government is forcing me to use systems that aren't secure. They're asking me to enter my personal details into a website that's not, and there's no security measure at all. So I really get sick and tired of having to put in my personal details, knowing they are on the streets. So I'll call them up. I used to call them up and tell who I am. I used to tell them, hey, listen, this is wrong with your website. They can extract your whole database, and this is some data to prove it. And because if you don't extract any data, they will not believe you, because they just don't know what you're talking about. So you have to come up with some relevant data to prove you have been in there. So you have to cross the line before them to believe you.
Yeah, and then you get all the consequences of that. Hey, thanks for talking to me. We will continue the conversation on this program about solutions, actually, that might make it easier to do this kind of work. Well, again, thanks, and keep up the good work, I guess.
Okay, yeah, thank you for calling too, and success with the show tonight.
Thanks, man. So yeah, that was interesting. You see more and more people uncover stuff, and they are then the bad guys instead of the guys who make bad systems. Anyway, it's time for a bit of music while we get our next guest online, who will tell us a bit about the solution perhaps to this problem. Meanwhile, we listen to Travel by Dub Krause from the special Travel EP on the Coda Net label. Yeah, those net labels. Great music, all free to download. Creative Commons, of course. I will put links to the tracks on the show notes, which you can find on signal.hackerspaces.org/devrandom, just as one word, which is a brand new site that is, well, a brand new site. Anyway, as I said, it's really filling up in the studio. We have, for example, Jurt, who doesn't want to say anything. He is currently not saying anything in the microphone.
I'm not really not going to do that.
No. Okay, no. Thanks.
You just did, actually.
Actually not going to speak, no.
No.
Not saying
you
anything.
You refuse to speak.
Yes, I do.
Okay, thanks for speaking about this with us. And Walter, still, our legal department.
Shut up.
Oki is still here.
Emily, you're allowed to talk about it, provided you pay the bill.
Oh.
Either... I can bill these hours to you, or you shut up about that.
You can send them. I'll give you the number of our Swiss office later. Oki is still here, of course, busy on his phone. And we actually have Bami Eater here.
Exactly, it's not a phone.
It's a portable desktop.
It's an iPad Touch.
Hey, but...
it's too cheap to get.
What we just heard, this guy's been uncovering leaks. Totally different realm, I think, as the... Well, the kiddies that we saw do the KLDP stuff recently, like the Dutch, retired Dutch.
That's stupid.
Yeah, that
don't
is.
Fuck with the K.
I mean, but this is actually useful work that he's doing. There was a consultation recently in the parliament, and it was as a result of the DigiNotar case. I don't think I have to explain what that was all about. Now, everyone who's a bit into security will probably know. And it was kind of interesting because one of the experts that got it around the round table together with Rob Gongreip and, who else was there? Ot van Dalen from Bits of Freedom and Brenno de Winter. He's an investigative journalist, and he works a lot with hackers, like the one we heard just now. Is that right, Brenno?
Yeah, you could say that. And of course, I'm a member of Hack 42.
Hack 42. Are you a member already, Bami Eater?
No. I didn't write in yet, but soon I will be.
Because you're moving to Arnhem. He's got a nice new home. After this round table session, something interesting happened, right, Brenno? You picked something up from a politician, actually.
Yes, indeed. The thing was that one of the points that I raised during the hearing was that I'm worried about the atmosphere in the Netherlands. As soon as you uncover a leak, all legal means that are available to people are sometimes put into work. And I complained about it because if you want hackers to do a good job, don't get in their way with legal shit. Just let them do their job as far as they, you know, don't violate or don't really hinder people. Let them be. Well, then I had this guy who uncovered a whole bunch of leaks in a whole bunch of city websites, giving access to confidential documents. He reported that, and then he came to me. I wrote an article, and all of a sudden he was hindered by a lawyer who phoned him over the course of 12 hours more than 13 times.
Wow.
And threatening him, and he was so afraid that he didn't dare to talk to me, so I pressured him into talking to me again and making very explicit that fuck the lawyer, you did the right thing here. So I started making some phone calls, and the Dutch Socialist Party, PvdA, they decided, they said, we should have some kind of whistleblower protection for hackers. And then the lawyer retracted from the case. And I thought, why not give it a try and make a bunch of phone calls? And I found all the political parties, or nearly all, and more than two-thirds are in favor of such an arrangement.
Wow, so that's a majority in the parliament, actually.
A huge majority. And one of the parties still doubting was the Dutch Geert Wilders Party, PVV. But they are more and more becoming in favor, because today it became apparent that the leak that they uncovered, that their whistleblower is actually being criminally charged and may lose his job for that.
Wow. So that turned them around. But that's quite some news, actually. That's quite unique in the world as well. But what's next? I mean, what does the proposal look like? How does it actually get implemented?
Well, we are still working on trying to find out what's needed in the first place, because you can't give like a free stamp to hackers to let them do whatever they want to do, and no law applies to them. So you have to find a way to work on that. That is something that the Socialist Party is currently looking at. But far more important is not the criminal part of it, but the civil suits. And make it impossible that if somebody steps up and says, like, you have a leak, and I disclose this in a fashionate manner, that there's nothing they can do about it, you know, and kind of an anti-libel type of law. But that's still something we have to work out. But the thought is there, and the thought is really, I think, the first in Europe, at least.
That's what do you think, actually, Walter, about this proposal?
Well, it's not a proposal yet, so I have no idea on it. But the idea of having some exceptions for white hat hackers, yes. But I think we actually should fix the cybercrime treaty.
Yeah, and through Skype I now see that I shouldn't have said Socialist Party, but Labour Party.
Yes.
Sorry, Walter, sorry.
It's
that's always
Labour
what
Party.
You get with legal departments, you know, they start to pick on these little words. But he's got a pointer.
Yeah, about this proposal, which isn't a proposal yet, do you guys have any idea what we hackers can do to help bring this forward?
Not those stupid things like hacking the pension website of the
KLPD.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then start to threaten them to disclose 25 records each and every day. You know, that if you want the police to come after you, that's, I think, the safest way to do it.
Also, what purpose does it serve? I mean, let's be we can dismiss this quickly. This is just stupid kids playing.
There's nothing responsible there. There is no injustice that you're trying to fight. You're just hurting people who can't help it themselves. That these mistakes were made.
So yeah, we
want responsible disclosure is the key.
Yeah, I mean, we want to exclude cases like the what we've been told, the so-called anonymous hack to the pension site, the site for pensioned police officers.
Yeah, well,
retired.
Yeah, retired. But with the other case of the Geert Wilders party, where it's the province of North Holland, where they have like the password is welcome, and you can get in, and if you disclose that. And then see, like, okay, look how easy you can get to sensitive documents this way.
It's
what was the website, by the way?
at least there was a password. I mean, if you look at the site of the
but don't go charge them with any hacking type related crimes. You know, this person did a fair thing. He disclosed something. It is a big scandal that they used the password welcome. You know, so it's totally justified to bring this out into the media and say this is public administration and they are doing a very bad job.
Hey, but Breno, I mean, there's been some protest recently as well to this proposal, which is not a proposal, mainly by security firms. They're saying they already pen test these government systems. So why do they need this bill? I mean,
well, for starters, They need such a bill because apparently it did happen. Somebody with the password welcome could get in, so they didn't check for it. So these security firms don't do a good job. This is not intelligent hacking. This is as simple as can be. Over the course of the next month, at one of the publications I work for, we will disclose a leak with privacy sensitive data each and every day to make the point that it is totally normal, not to check your websites for any these simple bugs. And the funny thing is, I could already, with all the tips I got, I could have already filled 2 or 3 months.
Wow!
It's appalling. And you know what? Between all these hacks, I've seen 3 that are somewhat more intelligent. The rest are all SQL injections, totally unnecessary leaks. Totally unnecessary. You know, you should have checked for that.
It's amazing. Yeah, how can people miss these basic things? So that's October, right? One leak every day.
Every working day, because it's government, huh? So in the weekend, give them a little bit of peace.
I want to read something in the weekend too.
You've got a point there. Well, you know, we might actually bundle a whole bunch of these leaks.
Hey, but these leaks are these leaks that are still open, or are they patch leaks already? Or I mean, if you go and disclose something,
we will notify them beforehand, of course. I'm sorry, Oki, but you know, you never know if they might leak in your direction. But we'll give them a heads up, of course, and make very explicit that they should take down their website and then clean up the mess and then perhaps come back.
Well,
because in many cases, if you leave data with the government, you don't do it because you want to, but because you have to.
You have to, yeah. There's no choice. Hey, thanks for talking to me, Brenno. And, good luck with the month of bugs. In the studio, it's getting virtually cuddly, I see, IRC channel. And I have some more music. And this is called Awkward Silence, the Marcujix remix. It's hard to pronounce, from Alex Polanto, and this is actually from another, it's from the Minuscule label. They have quite some cool tracks in there. Well, let's enjoy it if I find the right button. Yeah, so meanwhile we're heading to the end of this program. I just got a complaint from Walter that the music is not digestible without MDMA. Sorry, it's I think it's nice. It's nice and slow and chill for all the tired people. 13 listeners. Wow. There will be much more downloading it, you know. As I said, we're almost at the end of the show. Just a few things we need to discuss. There's Hack in the Box coming up. Anyone, Oki? You've been involved with Hack in the Box. What's up? When is this thing?
I'm core crew of the Netherlands, so this is KL. This is completely different.
Okay. But it is indeed in Kuala Lumpur.
That's a nice party in Berlin this Saturday.
Oh yeah, you were talking about this party in Berlin. What's up with that?
It's a 30 years CCC or something. Snap some koolstof. 30 jaar. This is 1 October. It's a small party in Stadtbad. That means like it's in a swimming pool in Berlin.
Swimming pool. It's a pool party.
So it is XXX Berlin. .ccc.de.
Well, given that you are so fond of Berlin, you are going, I assume?
I cannot say anything about this in any form, whatever, where I will be there, where I will not be there. So,
did any of you go to today's art by any chance in The Hague?
Just cycled in front of it and saw the glass house standing near the...
The glass house, yeah, on the... The City Hall. That was quite an amazing structure in there. I walked in there and there was a car and all of a sudden it started moving. It was a real life transformer that I never saw a transformer.
Transformers.
I was at Open World Forum in Paris. Sorry.
So you were okay. How was that then? What is that, the Open World Forum?
It used to be an entirely corporate event, which I felt very much at home at. And nowadays it's turning to a kind of a French-speaking edition of FOSDEM.
Oh God, so the hippies have invaded.
Yes, all those idiots with stickers saying on their laptops saying, we make porn, and at the same time looking like they haven't been late in months. So,
oops.
No, it's a bit hilarious. It's a corporate event at the Avenue Jos Sank, which is the poshest shopping street in Paris. And still you had a bunch of hackers hanging around and doing technical sessions. But not being a techie, I didn't go there.
You didn't go, but did you pick up anything at the Open World Forum, or was it just...
Net neutrality is a big issue in France, apparently.
Okay.
Cloud computing was still the big thing. And another interesting issue was the Internet of Things. It's, I think
is that still that's old stuff, right? We've been promised the Internet of Things for years.
Yeah, but it's in IT, all those hypes never really die down.
Okay.
But they reincarnate. And
virtual reality is also still the big promise, and
well, let's say multimedia was the big promise. We already have it.
Hey, but we're really running out. I mean, we were talking about MDMA. Okay, you've been at the Magnet Festival,
Yes, I have.
And that was also cool, right? That's just they pick some terrain and just make a party there.
Wait, I just...
Oh, you wrote stuff down. Well, you have to be quick.
Oh, it's like it was a month, a festival of a month.
Oh.
Like 24 hours a day, you go going on party... With free spirits and creative spirits, and well,
is it still going on? Or
No. They just cleaned up the mess. It was like a leave no trace event, so everybody had to clean up their own mess, had to bring their own stuff in. So, no, it's actually a very nice event also for the Heart 2013 because, two kilometers away from the backbone.
Okay,
that's not.
But that's right. We've got the next Dutch hacking camp coming up, of course, in 2013, and we have a name. It's OHM 2013. Observe, hack, make, and I'm looking forward to it. Meanwhile, that's in the future. There's also a lot of nostalgia going on in Amsterdam at the moment. Of course, where we had the hacker scene in the 80s and first Dutch internet provider, second according to some. There was actually an exposition in Amsterdam in the NIMCA. It's the Dutch Institute for Media Art. It's the art of hacking, and they are organizing a panel because apparently it's 10 years ago that the movie Hippies from Hell screened. And they have a panel with Rob Groengrijp and Karin Spink, and they're talking about ethical hacking in current ages. And I don't know exactly when it is, but it's somewhere next month, so check out the site. There's also been archaeology. archaeology mission into the old digital city, the Digitale Stad, which was well, quite a popular move, mud object oriented back then. And yeah, apparently they're scared of losing all this digital heritage. So the Museum of Amsterdam and some other parties got together and are digging up the past and getting all the stories from the people who used to hang out there. And that's kind of cool. I mean, the whole art of Moos is sort of a lost thing nowadays with all these 3D virtual reality worlds. But I think it's still cool. Oh, Walter.
Can I recover my old account?
Sorry, can you?
Can I recover my old account?
I think
there?
So. They have a repository also of all the equipment that used to be there. And I don't know. You should check it out. It's re-dds.nl. And they're looking for, yeah, there probably are a lot of those things still lying around. They're recovering all the log files that people still have, and it's it's digital archaeology, it's something else. Hey, but meanwhile, while we are listening and talking through Laced, which is music also from the Minuscule label by Donor and Truss, I'm going to say goodbye. One final thing, tomorrow is Eindbaas. Pretty awesome Eindbaas with nice guests. It's a chiptune concert in Utrecht. And, well, you should definitely go there if you're into that stuff, because it's pretty wild. It's not just, well, your old-fashioned mom and dad chiptunes. It's actually quite a heavy techno party sometimes. They've got the Bitshifter, which is a really big name in the scene. Kovox, Man of Mega, of course. Oh, and they sold out, and I have a ticket. So if you don't have a ticket, well, then you're not there. That's it for tonight. Thanks for listening. Thanks, guys, for being in the studio and heating up the room here.
No problem.
And to everyone else, until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.